Hello, friend. Welcome to the Watery Desho podcast. We are so happy to have the pleasure of your company. If this is your first time listening, sit back, relax. We hope you enjoy. If you are coming back because you enjoy our content and you'd like to support us, you can go to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/WateryDesho. We've got all kinds of fun rewards and bonus content like early access, Discord roles, additional audio and video content, all in three budget-friendly tiers. If you're not able to support us financially, no biggie, we totally understand. If you'd like to help us out for free, you can always give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which helps our discoverability. You can follow us on SoundCloud, on Twitter, at WateryDesho. You can always send us an email at WateryDesho@gmail.com if you want to correspond with us. We may not get to read every correspondence on the show, but I can promise you that we do read and try to respond to every single one, because we do love our community, which we hope you'll be a part of. Thank you for your kind attention, friend, and without further ado, let's get to the show.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, and beasts. Welcome to Watery Desho's Stream of Four, Season 6. We're actually still doing this. We've not been forced off the air by YouTube yet for nefarious reasons, although I'm sure we'll come up with some in the progress of this particular, you know, course of anime we're going to be covering today. I am Shaden, and joining me, you know, from across the pond, but always close to my heart, is the Soul Doctor.
Good day, Shaden. Today we're going to talk about our greatest cultural export, Vikings.
That applies to neither of
us. They're from our country, you know, mate. Right? Vikings.
Have you been reading history from Wikipedia again by any chance there, Doc?
You caught me.
Bit sketchy. Just going to say. Anyway, yeah. Yes, we are indeed back for another full core of anime. This is going to be Vinland Saga, which you all voted on. Thank you all again, everyone who actually took the time to vote for that particular show, and all the others as well in our poll. But yes, Vinland Saga is what we'll be covering for the next 24 or so episodes, I believe. So for the next 6 months. My oh my.
Going to be quite the voyage.
Do, before we get into Vinland Saga, have a bit of housekeeping to do, firstly.
Though. Yeah, should we say this now, or should we say this after? I can't decide. The VOD people might want us to get out of the way now, but I don't know if we should wait for more people to come in to the live. I'm torn. What do you think?
Well, I think we'll do it now, because we also need to cover the final Zaren Samai polls as well.
That's right. Okay.
Yes, we do need to. So a couple of quick things. First off, you might be thinking to yourself, my God, Shane's room is like in panscopic vision or some nonsense. And my voice may also possibly sound different. So, quick story behind that, I've actually recently invested in a brand new webcam. It's now 1080p. I am in HD. Unfortunately, yep. For you know, everyone who might be watching, you now get to see my wonderful chrome dome in 1080p. I also now have a brand new Blue Yeti microphone. Both of these are quite expensive, but I thought, you know, it's about time I invest in the podcast. Sadly, I chose to spend the money on that as opposed to a hair transplant and a personality transplant as well. But they don't go quite as cheap, I'm afraid. So you're going to have to put up with me now being in glorious HD from here on out.
I want all 60 frames per second of the head, of the beer, of the ketchup bottle.
The ketchup bottle is in absentia today, I'm afraid. It's not clocked in. But it will be replaced at some point. Very, very unfortunate indeed. So yeah, I've invested, and I'm pleased to report that, you know, once I actually, because I'm currently buying this very house I live in at the moment, would you believe? Oh my God. Once that actually has then gone through, and I have full possession of it, I'll be revamping the place into a proper stream setup. So I'm afraid you won't get to see much of my room for much longer, which is probably a blessing, actually. So enjoy that. Enjoy that. But yeah, big things happening over here for me personally right now. So keep an eye out for all that. But that's just me. We need to talk about the Wired podcast. So, Doc, do you want to lead in on what we're now going to be doing going forward?
Yeah, so, okay, well, I'll just, rather than doing the thing my wife hates and prefacing and prefacing and prefacing, I'm just going to get it out there. Water We Dish Show now has a Patreon, which you could probably have, you've probably already seen if you're paying attention to the scroll. Patreon.com/WateryDeshow. Mm-hmm. How to spell it is in the bottom. But yeah, I mean, we have done this for a long time without anything like this. And I guess the thinking behind doing it was that we really, really like doing the podcast and video content, and there's like more things that we wanted to do, but also we wanted to be able to do things like invest in better post-production software for the audio side of things, maybe be able to pay for hosting, just try to like be able to generate some revenue to improve the show and improve the circumstances around the show also. Mm-hmm. But this will enable us, I think, to do, we're going to offer like a lot more stuff, and we want to keep it pretty like budget friendly. If you go, you'll see that we have three tiers of reward, mm-hmm. $2, $3, and $5.
That's right.
I would have done a $1 tier, but fucking Patreon takes so much of a bite out of transactions that would just be like barely any money. Yeah. So we, sorry, go ahead.
Doc did unfortunately shout me down on the suggestion that we put in a $5,000 Patreon tier. No actual tangible benefits to it. By far, I just put it in there for giggles, but he actually did decline me on that. So yeah, we are indeed doing $2, $3, and $5 tiers at the moment.
We would fly you to Manchester to do the show live. Tier no one would ever subscribe.
Well, I was going to say for 5,000, you could do that easily, actually. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so we got $2, $3, $5. And they all include Discord benefits. We're going to have a patron-only Discord mm-hmm. server that we will hang out in pretty frequently mm-hmm. via voice and text. And we've got, sorry about that. I pushed a button I shouldn't have done.
Stop mashing buttons, Doc. This will do you well both in this particular arena and also in fighting games.
I was going to get you nowhere. The fighting game, the top strategy is don't press buttons. So you've got those Discord membership benefits on the $2 tier and the $3 tier and up gets you any additional solo content that we're going to do. Like Shadan, for instance, has he's been working on a long, long time. An audio essay on Shield Hero.
Oh.
So on one end, you've got like very, very kind of crafted, highly authored, artisanal content.
Too bad the same could be said for Shield Hero. Get fucked.
And on the other,
I hate that show. I hate
transatlantic high five just happened. And then on the other end, like you'll have me. Like I did a ramble that I recorded on Ready Player One,
you poor bastard,
which I just finished reading.
Oh motherfucker!
I know. I just finished reading, and that will be for the $3 tier. Any videos or audio essays or content that one of us decides to do will be for that tier. And that tier also will get to, in the Discord server, ask questions about whatever the free stream of thought is. By the way, this show that we're doing now will remain free to all. We plan to cover more shows for the Patreon subscribers, but I'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. Single person content will be behind the $3, and then the question asking, yes, in the Discord you'll get to ask us questions about Vinland Saga or whatever we're covering, and since you will be able to ask them before or during the show, like if you ask them we will have to absolutely answer it no matter how ridiculous, and we will have to give a detailed answer on stream. So also, like, for the $5 tier, any of the stuff that we do where we all come together, or two of us come together to do stuff, like we do riff tracks. You longtime subscribers to the pod will be familiar with our Mystery Bando Theater, and yep. we've already got some of those recorded that we'll be putting on the Patreon soon.
I believe Angel Cop is one of them, is it not?
Yes, for the first half of Angel Cop, and we'll do the second half soon. But the rest of so we did the big poll to decide what we're going to cover, and Vinland Saga, of course, won, but Given came in second. So we thought people want to like hear us talk about Given. We'll do a stream of thought style show on Given, and that'll be behind the $5 tier. And we may do, like, you know, more stuff. There's now you can request kinds of content that we do.
Oh god!
Like the five dollar tier is gonna do.
We're so screwed.
Is gonna have.
We are screwed.
I know. We'll be polling people there.
All that's gonna happen to me is that, you know, once we get a nice, you know, stable set of Patreon subscribers, all they're ever gonna ask me to do on my Souls of Fun is just Isekai constantly, and it's not even gonna be even remotely good Isekai. It's gonna be absolute garbage. But hey, if that's what you want to pay for, then you can go for it. That's the benefit of being a subscriber, you know, to our Patreon.
Yep.
You get to choose. You get to, you know, assert your power, your democratic power, and put me through hell if you so wish.
You assume the role of Jesus in the Carrie Underwood song. You take the wheel.
Oh, I was thinking more when you said
that. I'm sorry,
that
I just made that reference.
I thought when you said Jesus, then you're referring more to being, you know, nailed to a cross. Because that also
that's us. Oh, boy. Yeah, that'll be us. But you can go and have the full breakdown on patreon.com/watereattheshow. Maybe some people will pay for this nonsense that we do. I don't know. We'll see if they don't have enough of it. Like I said, just to reiterate, this is going to remain free, and our subscriber milestone shows will be free too.
Oh, that's a good point.
That only seems fair.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna be doing one of those since we just passed 400 on YouTube.
Thank you everyone. Thank you to everyone who subscribed. We really appreciate it.
Yes.
Do you wanna reveal what we're gonna be doing? Oh Jesus.
I don't know. I kinda think we should save that reveal because I don't actually know when we're gonna do it. So
yeah,
we have to talk to Virgilio.
I mean, this is the beauty now of me having a HD webcam. You can just more accurately read like my pained facial expression. Like, about... Oh, Jesus, no. It's not more love, Hina. Thank fuck for that.
No.
Man.
No. I'm sorry I did that. That was my fault.
Why are we still friends? Jesus Christ. Thank you to everyone who has subscribed thus far. We will indeed soon be doing another... we'll be doing another, you know, subscriber milestones stream to discuss our findings of a particular show that I will not name now or ever, really. I don't want to admit to people after the fact that I will have seen what we're going to be discussing. I mean, I told you all the three that I've watched Shield Hero, which was shit, and is still shit, and will always be shit, but at least I had the courage to admit that. I will never have the courage to admit what we're going to be watching, but stay tuned for that one soon, for you, loyal viewers. That will have, is it, as we've mentioned, be free. It will not be behind a Patreon barrier or wall.
No. So, like, we love you guys. We wanted to try to keep as much of what we're doing. I think we're going to keep everything that we've been doing on the free side. Oh, and the bigger deep dive podcast that we don't do as much of these days.
Yes.
Those will still be free. All the patrons, $2, $3, or $5, will have early access to those. So I'm still working on the Outer Men Night podcast. Shadon's working on Macross Delta. Those will come out eventually, we promise.
Yep.
And still, patrons will have early access to those. But we wanted to do... Yeah, it's hard. We wanted to do more, but we wanted to, by doing more, be able to make the show better in a lot of ways. But also, you know, we understand that not all of our you know, relatively small audience, like, has the coin to throw around. So we wanted to keep doing free stuff that people like and that people are already watching. So I think we've struck a good balance.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Doc, with all the relevant housekeeping out of the way, do you have the Sounds of My polls up?
I thought I did, but I've... Oh, yep, I got them. I got them.
Doc wants to connect, but his 4G signal is just not that good.
Right. I want to connect, but 5G doesn't exist yet.
I want to forget, but I forgot the Wi-Fi password.
That's real. I don't care how many times you lock me out. I'm going to keep on trying to connect to your router. Okay. Our last... Oh, man. Fuck. I didn't think about Sars and Mine for so long. And now I'm thinking about it again. I'm sad that it's over.
Yeah.
God damn it. I miss it. That was so good. Okay. All right. So, poll one. I want to connect, so... Sarah's and my were your four choices.
Yeah.
Sarah's and my won in a landslide, of course, with 76%.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah number one and Sarah number three were tied at 9%. Sarah number two fell behind and only finishes up at 7%.
Unfortunate. But otherwise, nice spread of answers there. Exactly what I was hoping for. You all did a bang-up job in imitating the Sarah's and my cry. That's the joke poll of this one. If you notice, like, whenever I do polling, I tend to throw in a joke one and something that's more, you know, oh my god, this is super serious shit. So we'll move on to that one now.
So, poll number two, if you could completely erase any one mistake from your life in the style of the show, would you? Or would you keep it in your memory as something to grow and mature from?
Mm-hmm.
54% said yes, they would completely erase it. And 46 said no, they would keep it as something, as a foundation to build from. And I mean, that speaks to like the tough choice that is, and why I'm really glad that's not a choice.
No, exactly. I mean, it's obviously not possible in real life to forget about the things that have happened to you in the way that happens in the show. We don't have, you know, an amorphous blob shaped Kappa come along who can just wipe away your memories, you know, wholesale, as it were. But people, you know, do often bury things down that they don't want to talk about or re-experience or relive or reimagine. And I just felt it was worth following up from that question, you know, that either answer is perfectly valid. I mean, we obviously were not privy to the context that people answered that question into and what they were relating their experiences to. But however you feel is best to, you know, deal with stuff that you've had difficulty with in your life, the troubles that you've been through, you do that. As much as a show like Sirens of Maya, as I said last time, you know, is, you know, trying to push a good message that it is okay to, you know, go through loss and let that be something that you grow stronger from, something that you learn from and mature from, it's also entirely fair for people to say that they shouldn't have to go through it in the first place, and there's no shame in that. There's no shame in it whatsoever. But I do want to thank people again for taking part in those polls and offering the perspective on that. So thank you very much, everyone. We will, of course, be doing polls for Vinland Saga going forward. So keep an eye out for those as we go along. Doc will be handling them this time around, and I'm going to be handling discussing episode one, which is Somewhere Not Here. Sounds like my lifeling in Manchester, to be honest. But anyway, ho ho.
You want me to throw creatives?
Yes, please.
Before we get started?
Please.
Okay, so... pardon me. So, Vinland Saga is originally, as I'm sure most people know, but just in case we don't, it's a manga written by Makoto Yukimura, and it started in 2005, and it is still running. So, I don't know, actually, offhand, the publication schedule... So the first 6 months of its run, it was in weekly shonen magazine, hence weekly.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, in December of 2005 and onward for the next almost 15 years, it went to monthly afternoon.
Oh,
and let me just say, that makes so much more sense, because this should not be in a boys, a little boys magazine. This should not be, this should be in a seinen publication, with other, you know, sort of more mature and or violent stories. There are 21 volumes of this thing out, 21 Takabons. And the finally, the anime adaptation is here. I think a lot of people have been wanting this for a long time. I've heard nothing but praise about this manga for years. The author also wrote Planetess, a manga. It's really short, the manga, for that. I haven't read it, but I've seen the anime adaptation, and I love it. I love it.
Has the author discovered Idolmaster at any point? I'm just thinking there might be a link here.
Yeah, right. Please don't let him, like, you know, download a gacha game or watch an idol show.
I mean, what do you think is the biggest threat, you know, to mangaka these days? Old age, you know, not having secure funding, piracy even, perhaps? No, it's literally idols. Idols will ruin a mangaka's life. I mean, with Berserk, that will probably end when I'm 80 and I've got cataracts. Read it. So it's worthless.
Do you think that his name escapes me at the moment, the Berserk mangaka, I can't remember. But
Kentaro Miura?
Yes, Kentaro Miura. Do you think Miura and George R. R. Martin get together and they just laugh? They just laugh at everyone.
No. They keep arranging to get together, but they never actually manage to successfully.
Yes, I agree. Zitoglossia comes for us all.
Yeah. It's just procrastination continually. Trying to outdo each other by never meeting for that one coffee they promised. Oh, well.
So we'll stop procrastinating and move forward with this piece here. So the anime adaptation, again, long-awaited, is being broadcast on NHK, General TV of all networks. Like, this might be something you'd expect to see on, you know, late-night time slot, but I actually don't know the time slot, so maybe I'm misspeaking. Maybe it is being shown late at night on NHK. What I mean is on a channel or network that it is positioned and marketing its shows toward anime fans rather than the general audience, right? NHK is more like Japan's PBS. Their public television, their national broadcasting, and they do show anime on it, but I think it's, you know, you may be surprised that a show like this is on there, but I think it just speaks to, like, the quality of the story, of the source material, and the expectations they have for it. So this show is directed by Shuhei Yabuta, and Mr. Yabuta, let me just tell you, this CV, Shadon, is weird.
I was expecting, but carry on.
It's fucking weird. Like, because aside from a couple of storyboarding or photography gigs, this man has been the 3D CG director or producer, CG designer, for, like, dozens of shows. Like, that's his thing. That's everything.
Interesting. Does he have any known, like, or big deal directional credits? Or is, like, this literally his first? No. Wow.
He's the first director of anything.
I'm not privy to, like, you know, how popular or how respected Vinland Saga is in Japan as an IP. But, I mean, again, like a lot of things, I know of it through reputation, through osmosis, from, you know, why read and why hear from people. And that's a big deal to give a guy this property who has no or little directional experience previously and has only ever worked on the lesser, quote, that's not me being derogatory, it's me saying that, you know, it's obviously on the ranking scale, like, you know, not as important as a directional position. So, wow.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And we'll hopefully, well, I mean, spoilers, there have been 3 episodes released this show thus far, actually. Can I also talk very briefly about Amazon? How useless they are? I mean,
of course.
Is it not the height of irony that that a company that prides itself on delivering stuff on time, physical objects on time, can't put this out digitally when they agree to do it.
This is their MO, unfortunately.
Jesus Christ.
They struggle with this shit every season, it seems like, with a show that I am watching on their channel. They have distribution issues.
I mean, I remember when we watched Banana Fish and we just, you know, just started, like, drumming our fingers, waiting for it to actually, you know, come up eventually. I mean, maybe these are the same guys who, you know, decided that they would organize the taxi I was supposed to have for my doctor's appointment this afternoon.
I'm
not bitter about that at all, really. I mean, it's not like, you know, I was going to have blood tests or anything like that. Something potentially quite important. Anyway, I'll not bore you all set for that. So yeah, we've had 3 episodes already. They've been released simultaneously. So just to clarify for people who might be joining us late or who haven't seen our social media feeds, we're only covering episode 1 today, even though the others are out. We'll then be doing episode 2 next week and episode 3 afterwards, because there is quite a substantial gap between that chunk of 3 and episode 4 coming along.
Yeah.
Why they've done this, I don't know, but it will work with it however we can. One thing I'm going to say for my part is that I have watched all 3 episodes already. I am going to do my best to treat my retelling of the events here and my later talking points as if though I've only seen the first episode, to not give too much away now. Because I think there is a lot to take away from the first episode in particular in isolation, even before you consider the events of 2 and 3. So that's my promise. Whether or not I, you know, keep to it and don't just start gabbing off randomly as is my one is a different matter. But we'll try. We will certainly try. All right. So yeah. I think that covers everything. Let's actually talk about, you know, finally.
Oh, sorry. No, I was not done. but that's okay, because the Amazon rant needed to happen, because they needed to be. I need to let the world know. We both need to let the world know how annoying it is. But it's interesting. It's good that you brought up Banana Fish, because the head writer of this show.
Oh, this is not the link I was expecting, but carry on.
The head writer of this show, and he is listed on the Wikipedia as the episode writer for all the episodes, Hiroshi Seko.
Oh, yes, my boy.
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me in some ways, because for Banana Fish, not only was he the head writer, but he did the screenplay for all 24 episodes.
Wow.
And, you know, he also was the head writer for Mob Psycho 100, seasons 1 and 2. More involved with season 2, even. He wrote the scripts for, like, 10 episodes of that show. And there are only 13 episodes.
Well, now that you've made the Banana Fish link, I've got to put it in my headcanon that Thorfinn, who will be introduced to soon enough, is actually Ash's ancestor.
Oh, I like it. I want to hear this. I want to hear this link. But, I mean, he's got other credits that are less, highly thought of on his list. It's a mixed bag, but, like, lately, especially it seems when Seko has been more involved and in adaptations as opposed to original works like Darling in the Franxx. He was involved with that too for a couple episodes. But it seems like this guy's really great at adaptation and great at being in control. Now you could argue that he had great source material. Mm-hmm. Me not being familiar with the source material of Vinland Saga, Banana Fish, or Mob Psycho, I wouldn't have anything I could say that's very possible. I haven't read any of it, but adaptation could be fucked up.
Yep.
And he seems to be really good at it. We'll see how he fares.
The finished product is what counts, really, when it comes to that. I mean, adaptation is always fascinating to me in terms of, like, what you choose to keep, what you choose to add, trim, you know, all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, the devil, you know, the proof's in the pudding. What is the end product like? Is it good in its own right? And, well, as we said, I've never read Vinland Saga myself. I know only the sketches and details on it prior to watching it. But we'll certainly give you our opinion as we go through all of the episodes.
I was going to ask you, these guys, this director and writer combination, have worked together before on your favorite anime property.
Oh, no.
One whose visual aesthetic reminds me a lot of the aesthetic of this show, actually.
Go on.
Attack on Titan. So, Yeah, Seko wrote a lot of Attack on Titans, and our director, his name, let me scroll up, I'm in the wrong window, Shuhei Yabuta, did a lot of the 3D stuff for AOT, no. And also Kabaneri, which is related conceptually, but yeah, go for it. Give me your Attack on Titan talk.
Can I just say how happy I am that I chose to drop after the first season? Everything I've heard about since then has just sounded like it's just a complete mess.
Yeah.
So
I'm the same. I didn't watch any really past season one. So
I mean, all right, it's not quite the same as when I, you know, started reading about all the hubbub about Game of Thrones finale, and everyone was like, "You should be watching this all along." I'm like, "Who's laughing now? Who's laughing now?" That's 8 seasons of nothing that I dodged, and I could not be more smug about it.
Oh my god.
Anyway, alright. We've danced around the issue long enough. Let's talk about the shows.
Yep.
So let us finally get to talking about the Elder Scrolls Skyrim anime. Wait, no, wrong thing. Sorry. Although that makes me think that if there's such a thing did exist, then you just have Todd Howard appearing as himself.
It's trying... Skyrim!
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a better... I was going to do the... You talked about winter is coming. Mm-hmm. It's come for these characters. But Skyrim is a really good, really good one I didn't think of. God.
If Skyrim was an anime, by the way, I think Todd Howard would just appear as himself in it, and he'd just constantly be trying to like talk directly into the camera like this. He'd be like, "Hey guys, why don't you buy Skyrim for the Switch? Or how about Fallout 76? Anyway. Let's not think.
Definitely want to do that. Did you have problems with your Amazon stream? Because Felix is saying that, you know, he did a download and it wasn't good.
I didn't download it. I just streamed it. And it was fine. Although, mm-hmm. for some reason, they had all 3 episodes up, like, one after the other. Like, when you get to the end of the episode, it says next episode. But you couldn't select them individually from the list on Prime's page. But saying mm-hmm. that Amazon Prime is bad for video streaming is like saying, you know, that water is great for stopping electricity. Just saying. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's actually talk about Vinland Saga. So Vinland Saga, episode 1, Somewhere Not Here. It actually does start appropriately with Somewhere That Is Not Here in the context of the show. We meet one of our protagonists, Fawz. That'll be important later, by the way. His name is not an accident, you know, of just, you know, being named after the Norse god of thunder. It'll be relevant to his relationship in a future episode with a different character. Anyway, he's currently lying in a field of wheat somewhere, and he stands up, and, you know, it's all very picturesque, looks down, oh my god, dead bodies everywhere, and then, well, it's your average Viking Friday night. Everyone's fighting each other at the sea. Fawz is joined by Thorkell, who's a giant berserker dude with an axe he can cleave through stuff like hot knife through butter. Fawz has a plan to go take out the enemy. He starts navigating between ships, taking out everyone he sees, carving them up like they're nothing. He's just pretty much unstoppable, and he's not even really phased or struggling by any of it, which will be important later as well, I should stress, put a pin in that. To the point where he even gets hit by an arrow, and he's just like, bitch, please.
Yeah. It's like the equivalent of, you'll remember this, a Gundam Wing battle, where one of the mechs is just like pirouetting through...
Mm-hmm.
The shitty grunt mechs and just like taking no damage and like shooting a gun and just giant swaths of other robots explode before them. It reminded me of this.
Indeed. So at the point that he actually ended up getting shot, like he continues to carve his way for a couple of different soldiers. He eventually forces one of them into the water, and after dealing with him, his sword, he lets it go and it falls to the ocean floor, at which point he then comes ashore. One thing I will note, by the way, is we are given very little, if no, context on why this fight is even happening, what the sides are, what the stakes are at play here. And you might think to yourself, well, that's a problem. It isn't, but that's something I'll save later, because I think it's important that it is actually completely context-free.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then we get the OP. Now, hands up here if you've you know, been around since we at least did Banana Fish. My hand's up. If you've been around...
Totoro, get your hand up.
So, if you've been around and you've listened to our stream of thoughts on Banana Fish, and have even watched the show but not necessarily listened to us do that, you might think to yourself, why does that OP sound familiar? Let me stroke my beard. It's the return of our old favourite, you know, Japanese grunge emo band, Survive Said the Prophet, doing the OP for this one.
You could, the scream. You could recognize that scream at the end. It's so fucking good. Mm-hmm. I love this OP, like, and you could just, like, I love the scream at the end and how it syncs up with the image of Thorfinn, just, like, screaming to the air and to the beam of light. Like, it's so fucking good. Mm. You just feel it. You feel his anger really, really good in that scene.
Mm. So, after the OP finishes...
You feel it really good. I'm good critic.
We're not music critics. We're not even really anime critics. We're just... I mean, we are probably a bad podcast after all, so we're just keeping on brand here. Anyway, yep. So after the OP ends, we cut to Thorfinn, and he's getting water from a river. This is Iceland, and it's the year 1002. So, new millennium, new star, etc., etc. That year will be relevant in a bit when we meet a character coming up who, believe it or not, does actually, or rather did actually, exist at the time. Bear that in mind when we get to him in a moment. But something to pay note to here is the environment. Of course, we had previously, you know, Thor's vision of this picturesque, you know, verdant, rich, and fertile land. And, well, we're in, I think it's Iceland now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, we're in Iceland now, and, well, it ain't called Iceland for nothing. It's a desolate, harsh place, and a lot of the opening scenes here are contextualized by just them doing activity and chores like milking cows, clearing snow from the roof, Thorfinn getting water from the river. It's not an easy life, or at least it's not made out to be one. So, after all this, we then have Thorfinn, by the way, look out to sea, and this is our first clue that he's got, you know, a wide imagination. He clearly wants to go see the world. I mean, he's an impressionable young kid. It's not really that surprising. But this is the point where we meet, if I am not mistaken, what was his name, full name again? Leif Erikson.
Leif Erikson.
Now,
the real dude.
he is a real dude. Because here's the thing, right? Yeah. I was watching Vinland Saga for the first time at the weekend. And it gets to this point where it says year 1002. And I'm like, did the Vikings come to the Vinland, what, as it were, at the time? Or were they not, like, you know, casting their net a bit wide by going to, of all places, the Americas, the North America specifically? So in advanced history, I thought, you know what, let's go to everyone's favourite, you know, treasure trove of knowledge and not all, you know, spurious source of information, Wikipedia. And let's go look it up. Leif Erikson is actually a real guy. He is the son, I believe, of Erik the Red. And his deeds were immortalized in two sagas, the Saga of Erik, and I think the other one, if I'm not mistaken, was...
Leaves of Grass.
Thank you.
No, that's not true. That was me fucking around. That's not true.
thanks. I got backstabbed.
That is, I think, the Walt Whitman poetry book about nature. Okay, I remember reading about him in social studies in elementary school.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a cool Viking guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so he actually did go to Vinland, which is currently modern-day North Canada, if I'm not mistaken.
Which is, like, I'm so sorry. Like, this
well,
fucking that, cracks
well,
me
well,
up.
We're not, getting any Patreon supporters from Canada anytime soon. Nice one, Doc.
This has nothing to do with me disliking Canada. I love,
oh,
I
see,
love
do
everyone
Canada.
That I've ever met. No! No! That's not what I mean. That's not what I mean at all. I love everyone I've ever met from Canada. I've never been. I almost went to the University of Toronto.
If you're not eating pussy next time we're on here, then it's... We're done. That's it. Shut down already.
But, like, the fact that... Just... So, I didn't know that Vinland was Newfoundland, right? Until after I watched this and looked it up. But, like... Yeah, just... They talk about it, like... You know, the fucking... What is that? The great... Do you remember Land Before Time? Do you remember... Does anyone out there remember the Land Before Time?
Yes.
Animated films. And the dinosaurs... were in a dire straits, the vegetation was dying off, and they said the Great Valley is where it's at. Green, lush, there's no problems, flowing water. This is how they speak of Vinland.
Yeah.
And just the fact that they're just like Canada, the place of hopes and dreams, for some reason, it like makes me, it just makes me laugh because it'd be like if they said, you know, Philadelphia or New Jersey. I mean, just like name any real place and they're like, the place will be free from all of our oppressors.
To be fair, Topeka,
you know.
To be fair, in the time of slavery in America, after it was formed, there were the railroads to Canada. You know, where once it was outlawed in the Commonwealth, slavery that is. You know, escaped slaves would try and reach there to become free. So, you know, it actually
that's true.
So yeah,
that's true.
It's not the last time that it will be seen as a place of freedom. But yeah, Eric. Reason he's here is he's actually telling a group of kids, including Thorfinn, about Vinland and what he found while he was there, about how it was like, you know, rich and verdant, you know, like, you know, it was nice and warm in contrast to the freezing hellscape they live in now, and including how he met a couple of the natives there, and he obtained from them the headdress that he's wearing. And the common thread here is that all the kids apart from Thorfinn think he's a liar and, you know, he's talking out of his ass. And Thorfinn, however, is all over this stuff. He's completely in on it. Fors returns and says, like, sends all the kids away to bed. But something to note as well is that Thorfinn also mentions that his dad is a warrior. This will be relevant to his own character later. Because thus far, what we've seen of Fors, like, when he's just doing his usual shtick of, like, you know, the homestead stuff, is he's very mild-mannered. He's not really much into nonsense, and he's not like, you know, big brawly, like, you know, I'm gonna get my way through violence kind of guy. He's just basically hard working. He's a very marked contrast from who he was in some ways and some others not when we saw him in the battle scene that took place many years earlier.
There's like a quiet strength about him.
Yes,
you know, even when he's, you know, doing regular things with the villagers.
Mm-hmm.
I like, I mean, not to spoil episode 2, but when he's trying to make the bowl, that was great.
Yep.
I love that scene.
Absolutely. So I know for a fact, by the way, shouts to Santa Monica Studios, I know now where you cribbed your notes for Kratos and Atreus from God of War 4 from. I know where you pinched those notes from. I'm on to you.
Especially given the fact that this has existed for 15 years.
Yeah, I'm on to you. I know where you copied those bits from. Telling you now.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
We get a
brief intermission shot of some gentleman wandering through the snow, and he's got a collar around his neck with a broken chain on it. Eric and Fors are drinking bead, presumably, and they're talking about how the winters are getting worse, like, and colder, and people are starting to struggle. A lot of the livestock will die. Again, a big emphasis placed on environment here and where they live and how it's not easy in any way, shape, or form. This is also where we get introduced to Fors' daughter, Thorfinn's older sister, whose name currently escapes me because I can't pronounce it
properly. Ylva.
Ylva, thank you. Ylva, to me, I don't know if it's just me, but if she were transferred into a Leiji Matsumoto anime, she would look exactly like the lead character from Galaxy Express 999. Am I wrong on that? She's got more than a passing resemblance, I think.
Huh. Oh my god, Maytel. Well, you know, she has a similar fashion. She could pull off the hat and the fur and everything. Something about Ylva, like, she strikes me as more hardy, whereas Maytel was very sort of waifish. And would not survive the cold winter.
Probably for the best. We then get Thorfinn having a dream in which he is dreaming about traveling to Vinland and meeting, I'm going to probably completely mispronounce this, so my apologies to any ancient Vikings in the chat here, Jormungandr.
Sorry, guys. Right, Jormungandr.
Jormungandr, yeah. The world serpent.
World serpent, yeah. 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 One of the children of Loki, I believe.
I neglected to mention, by the way, there is a mention of a gentleman named Floki.
This is like the first Viking DJ, I feel like. Floki.
DJ Floki in Floki. The house.
Yeah. Sip your mead while I spin the Viking wax. That was a Viking horn sound. That's a really bad one.
So
world serpent, like, and the kid brings it up too, like, it was supposed to, correct me if I'm, because, so you've read the Gaiman mythology book, right?
I have.
Okay, do you, so, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been almost, I think it's been like a year since I've read it, but, so he, Jormungand, like, encircles the world, right? Like,
yep.
the boundaries of the world, and if you sail far enough, you'll bump into him, and
yep.
he will kill you, and he's just waiting for Ragnarok to, like, spring on the gods and fight them to try to, like, obtain the tree? Am I correct in all this, or am I...
Vaguely, I can't, I mean, I've, okay. it's been a while since I've read it too, but that's the broad thrust of it. But anyway, yeah. despite that, he's having a dream about it, and this is basically Thorfinn's current character, which is his naivety. I mean, he is a kid, it's to be expected.
Yeah.
And we will learn mm-hmm. more of that in the coming episodes, again, not to get too ahead of myself here. But he wakes from his dream, his sister gives him a hug, and he actually overhears his father and Eric still talking. But anyway, we cut to the following morning in which... Thors and Ylva are...
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you a question about this scene when Thorfinn wakes up and Ylva has climbed into his bed? So the way she plays it off is very much like, you know, being kind of like jokey big sis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to bully you a little bit, but also love you a little bit. Do you think that... I was having to think when I rewatched it that the reason maybe originally she climbed in his bed was that she overheard the people, the other guys talking about, you know, the harsh things happening in Greenland and people dying, and she just wanted a little bit of comfort to go to sleep. Because, you know, she says, like, to him, hey, don't worry, leave the worrying to the adults, and maybe she's kind of projecting a little bit there.
Not sure. Could just be something as simple as it's bloody fucking cold, and you know, and
yeah, she doesn't like warm the cold.
That's understandable. Mm-hmm. But you say worrying is for adults. Well, she starts nagging Thors the following morning when they're trying to clear ice off the roof, saying, "Can we get a slave?" And Thors responds, "Well, I'm sorry, there aren't any left after all the isekais dragged them all up." No, sorry, but
Ho ho ho!
The jokes write themselves.
I really like that is a thing, because to me, when she asks, can we get a slave, like, I think there's so many things in this episode and the next one too that, like, establish and reinforce over and over again that, like, these people in this village don't really have a perspective of what life outside the safe haven is like.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they're going to be like, can we get a slave?
Because
slavery is like, it's just like a person who nothing bad happens to, and like they come and we take care of them and they do some stuff for us and they're happy and we're happy.
Yeah,
like,
it's fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing morally or ethically wrong with it.
Yeah. Even the adults, right? It's not just the kids or teenagers like Ylva, like even the men just have no fucking idea at this point of what is outside their bubble, like the awfulness. And
well, they
boy,
get, well, they, it, they get some. Ugh. They even get a rude wake up out of this episode. Although I will say, mm-hmm. Irene is a cold mistress, as it turns out, because
right.
in shoveling all this snow off the roof, Ylva falls, lands on the ground. She's fine, but she's like, "What's this underfoot here?" Do you remember the gentleman I mentioned who, and I should note, has the broken collar of chains round his neck? He's there. She literally said, "Why can we not have a slave?" And then one turns up. Funny how that works, isn't it? But yeah, he's not doing so hot because, of course, he's been buried in the snow and he's mostly frozen to death. But we'll come back to him in a bit. For the moment...
he needs chapstick. More than any man has ever needed chapstick in anime.
He does.
His lips. Oh, they're so painful to look at.
Mm. For the moment, though, we cut to Eric and Thorfinn, who are at the shore. Eric is working on a boat. And Thorfinn is just asking me a load of questions about, like, you know, Vinland and all that. And this is the point where, as you said before about the idea of the naivety that they all have and the fact they're all in a bubble, Eric is, of course, a troubled person. And he mentions how this ocean is incredibly dangerous. detailing how he and his crew got caught in an ice floe, and he ultimately was the only one who survived that, just because they all starved to death. Although Thorfinn doesn't believe it. He thinks that, wrongly, of course, but it's what a kid would do, to be honest, that they're just trying to shelter him and coddle him. He's very headstrong. So understandably, he's...
There's no way my people ran away. Like, that's not, like, the foundation of who we are.
No.
The coward. Like, no, we're good and strong, and everything that is right is part of our makeup.
Yeah, my dad's awesome. Like, he, again, worships his dad. Understandably, like, you know, he's like the big, strong, burly man of the village. Why wouldn't you at that age and in that environment? Anyway, Thors takes this gentleman, who is not named in the episode, so I'm just going to refer to him as the slave, much as I would prefer not to, but anyway.
Right.
Back to the house, and he is frostbitten to hell. His arms and his legs are gone. He is a skeleton, like, he's got a massive scar across his chest and where he's been whipped. Ilva notes that he, you know, because he's a runaway slave, by sheltering him, they could potentially bring trouble upon themselves. That's what they run. That's the risk they run here. While this is happening, again, we cut back to Eric, and he starts telling Thorfinn about Harald, or however you pronounce his name. It's not Harald, unfortunately.
Again, the juxtaposition of a seemingly kind of ordinary thing, the name Harald, with this story.
Yeah, and this
to me is just like, you know, like they're worried about Jim. You know what I mean?
Jim.
I'm sorry.
Lord of all darkness.
Yes, Harald. Sorry. Go ahead.
Indeed. So, again, after telling him about that and how a lot of people fled to escape Harald's tyranny, Thorfinn doesn't believe him, thinks he's chatting bollocks, and runs away to go speak to his dad and, you know, basically tell on him, like, Dad, he's telling lies. But, of course, he runs in at the point in which, you know, the slave gentleman is, he's trying to revive him through Viking CPR. Not quite the accurate way of doing it, because I am first aid trained, he needs to do it a bit like tighter than that, but I'll give Force credit for actually knowing it, as opposed to just, you know, throwing, like, herbs on him or some shit, like, to try and make him feel better.
the technique has evolved over time.
Indeed. But the gentleman actually does wake up. He's barely alive, and he mentions, you know, that he doesn't want to go back, and specifically says, I don't want to go back to Halfdan's household. Now, Halfdan, we will find out later, is the younger brother of Full Dan and the older brother of No Dan. I've been holding that in for a while.
That's right.
I mean, sorry, how can you have a name like Halfdan and have anyone expect you to take you seriously? Come on!
See, you have a problem with Halfdan, whereas I, like, crack up at Harald. That's funny. Yeah, I guess, like, will his grandson be Double Dan? Family Double Dan. Sorry.
There'll be Quarter Dan or something like that. Oh, Jesus.
You're right. Quarter Dan sounds great.
Yeah, but...
That's a Yoshiyuki Tamino name.
I'm just thinking to myself, though, like, how they... Because we will see Half Dan in a bit. And I really wish he was literally 5 feet tall. And they just bring in a box for him to stand on when he confronts Fors. I really wish that happened. But sadly, we're not having the Monty Python version of Vikings here, so that's not the case. But anyway, he says he does not want to go back. And because the timing's a bitch in all this, Halfdan does indeed arrive at the port of the village. Spoiling for a fight. Now, we get introduced to Halfdan quite strongly here because... One of his goons takes issue with Ari, who is Thor's friend, who we were introduced to early in the episode. You know, where they start arguing on the fact that you took my eyes and you took my brother's leg and all that, which just really sounded like the, you know, Viking adult version of a child saying they stole each other's toys. but Halfdan doesn't take kindly to his subordinate stepping out of line and actually whips him around the face with his chains and rips half his skin off in quite a grisly moment.
Yes.
But Halfdan is clear on his perspective, which is the rule of order is supreme, and through, you know, slavery, that is the rule of law on people and how they should be controlled. Like, their freedom is irrelevant. It's law and order that he values above all else. He is probably, like, one of the most, like, perfect examples of what in D&D you would call a lawful evil character.
That's a good point.
He is completely on point. And that I actually really appreciate in this episode, that he is not, like... I mean, I'll be honest, when I saw this scene playing out, I thought, oh god, this episode's going to end with Halfdan, like, you know, burning the entire village down or some shit like that. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a savvy, if you're even a semi-savvy viewer of anime or fiction or TV in general, you can probably guess where some certain elements are leading up to here. You know, you've got Thorfinn being, you know, all open world, you know, he's like, well, Scott's the wider world, he's very naive, and you've got Force trying to keep the peace. You can put two and two together and start seeing how certain things would play out. But I did appreciate that Halfdan is more complex than simply just being a brute. He has a very clear philosophy about how he handles people, even though he handles them appallingly, as we see firsthand. But he is also, you know, very much, no one speaks for me, I speak for myself, get back in line, you follow the rules and you follow my lead. He's not going to let his people, for example, go running through the village, like, you know, pillaging and plundering, as they otherwise would want to do. So, Halfdan actually does end up charging into Thor's house. Ylva tries to intervene by saying, look, we were just looking after him for all that. And Halfdan says, look, this guy belongs to me, and I'm taking him back. Simple as that. You know? Easy peasy. Thor's, however, interrupts and says, how much did you buy him for? And
this was so great.
Yeah,
I love this scene.
And after a bit of banter, like, Halfdan says, look, two sheep, two ewes. And Thor's actually says, I will buy him off you. And Halfdan says, look, I'm taking him back to make an example of him to the other slaves so that they don't escape. Simple. Simple as that. But then Thor's actually ups the game by saying, look, just name your price. Name your price. I'll give you whatever you want just to keep him safe. And in the end, that price is 8 sheep. Which I will say I wish the anime was more explicit on how detrimental it is to lose these sheep to the family. It just seems to be something that happens and then it isn't really mentioned again, even though it would be quite a pain for them to deal with in our already harsh conditions, but I'll get into that later. But anyway,
Ylva's pretty distressed.
Yes, but,
you know, she's crying in the next scene.
Yes, but then again, she's also crying, like, you know, in like, oh, blast it, like in that kind of way, as opposed to we are genuinely fucked because of this. That, I feel like this could have had more import. But anyway, that is agreed. While this is happening, though, or rather, before this happens, because I'm kind of skipping around here, I apologize. The slave gentleman, he actually is hallucinating an open field of sunshine, you know, and verdant grass. So there's your parallel to what Thor's is doing at the start. And the parallels will not end there between Thor's and this gentleman, as it turns out. Although I'm going to have to save a lot of that discussion for episode 2. But anyway, Thor's actually relates to the slave the story of Vinland. Like, saying, you know, this is where we are. He tells him that's where we are. You know, you're in Vinland. You know, it's all good. Everything's great. And I'll discuss why he's doing this in a minute. Because it also ties back to, you know, Eric's own stories earlier that he was giving to the children. So anyway, with the deal concluded between Halfdan and Thor's, we cut practically immediately to nighttime and the sound of crying. And it is, as you say, Ylva. The slave gentleman sadly died shortly after the deal was completed, so it's basically been for nothing. Although I would actually disagree with that. But
or was it?
But I'll come to that in a minute. So Thorfinn and Thor's have a brief heart-to-heart on the place where they buried him, like this little cliff edge, in which Thorfinn actually asks his father straight, did we run away? And his dad's answer is essentially, yes, we did. And that is pretty much the concluding moment of the episode, although we do get a panning shot all the way back to the house where it's revealed that Thor's has a chest with weapons and armor in it. Which, again, is also relevant for something else. But otherwise, that's episode 1, Somewhere But Here.
Yeah.
Somewhere Else But Here. And, whew, oh boy. Right.
It was a great episode.
There's a lot to talk about even just in this first episode.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, there's been a lot of thought by on the author's part of this particular story, of how things mm-hmm. parallel together, and it only gets more so in the second episode. So, yeah. If you're new to Warrior Death Show, we do like to do talking points while we've got to go through the plot. As we often want to do, because we are doing these episodes sequentially, and in this case in particular, we often do get into the realms of speculation. But I'm actually going to try something a little different this time around, because I've been thinking about this in the run-up to covering this show, even before it. I want to talk about something called historical authenticity. So I'm going to open this up, but like, let's have a little thought exercise here, folks, here in the audience, who play along at home here. Would you say that the Lord of the Rings is historically accurate?
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. No. Mm-hmm. No.
Yes. No. Easy one. Give me a hard one. Come on.
No. You know what I mean by that. It is obviously not historically accurate. But would you say that disregarding the fantastical elements of it, like Mordor, Gollum, the Ring, etc., that when you look at, for example, say, the capital of Rohan, that has historical authenticity to it? It looks like, conceived like something that did exist in our own Middle Ages or before that. Would you agree that's true?
Okay. As best as I can remember that, yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you then go into anime with Berserk, again, not even historically accurate, and disregarding the fantastic elements of that show and that manga, there's an authentic element to it. You've got knights, you've got people mm-hmm. wearing armor. There's a certain degree to which you can believe its plausibility. Because this is the distinction between fantasy stories, and when I say fantasy, I do include ones that aren't even, you know, necessarily, like, they've got magic or goblins or shit in them. Just, I put Vinland Saga kind of sort of in that, because it's, well, maybe more just, like, say, medieval literature, something like that, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
There's probably a proper term.
Like a period piece.
Period piece,
historical
yeah.
fiction. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's a distinction between that and science fiction. Science fiction is, in terms of events and technology, usually stuff that happens in the future. So we can't say, for example, obviously, that we have things in reality we can draw comparisons to for that, like from history, because they aren't really there. I mean, obviously, we know we can do things like, you know, compare, like, draw inspiration. But you won't obviously see, you know, say, a Gundam in real life now, because that's sci-fi. It has that understanding of being in the future, whatever that may be, mm-hmm. and whenever that may be. So why is this relevant to the idea of historical authenticity? Here's the thing, right? When you're writing fiction, what you choose to include in your story, your fictional story, should serve the story. And I often see people say that certain elements are included in stories like Vinland Saga, such as slavery, rape, pillage, plunder, murder, you name it, all the fun things that happened. Historically, they were things that happened. I'm not going to pretend that they didn't. I'm not going to pretend that Vikings went around and just, you know, shook everyone's hands and, you know, that all they dearly did was just, you know, like, get drunk and just wander home, you know.
Yes.
That, like, a lot of brutal shit happened in history. But here's the thing. It's fiction. So when it comes to writing a fictional story, if you want to include such things as slavery, you need to have it serve a narrative purpose. It can't just simply be there for you to score points in terms of it feeling authentic. It's not enough to do that. And this is what I actually really appreciate about Vinland Saga, is I was worried somewhat that it was going to start crossing some lines in, like, you know, shit happens, because that was the thing that happened in its, you know, real-life equivalent. I mean, after all, we even do have, you know, Leif Erikson. So, clearly it's drawing from historical, you know, events. But the slave in this particular episode, the unnamed gentleman, he's included for a purpose. He's included to serve a narrative purpose. He's not simply there just because slavery was a thing that happened at that time, just to fill it as background noise. So, I really appreciate that Vinland Saga did that, but I think it's just generally something to bear in mind whenever you're looking at fiction like this, which has its origins in some sort of, you know, past, shall we say. Like, you know, Berserk, Lord of the Rings, you name it, they're all generally understood to be from the past, like, in terms of, like, their chronology, like, you know, before present day, because they mm-hmm. obviously are set in more primitive times. So I really, really appreciate that. But it's something just to bear in mind as you go through these particular things, that simply scoring points for historical accuracy or historical authenticity isn't enough because you're writing fiction, you fool.
Not a history book.
Yeah.
I agree.
Although that being said, that doesn't mean you can also scrimp on the other storytelling points, because then I'd be neglecting to mention things like Black Lion. God, that was a turgid piece of shit. Do you know...
Wait a minute.
Yeah, I said Black Lion.
Wait a minute. You think...
I don't think it...
That
no...
Black Lion where fucking... what's his face? Shit. Oda Nobunaga is like an alien from the future, and that's how he dominates all of Japan.
He's a Terminator.
It's incredible.
Yeah,
it rules.
But that's the thing. That's the thing, right? You know, it has that idea, like, you know, these are it's an alternate history, shall we say?
Yes.
It is.
Logically possible on a different timeline.
I have to believe. It's a terrible show. Don't get me wrong.
No, it's great.
But I don't think...
Silence.
I don't think there's a problem necessarily, you know, with doing something like that. But like I say, if you're going to say at that particular time, in that particular area, and start including things that did genuinely happen, or that groups of people or individuals were known to do, have it serve a purpose. I mean, Eric's inclusion in this story, for example, is, you know, to start seeding the idea of Vinland in Thorfinn's head. That's why he's here. Not simply just because he went to Vinland. Like, at the moment, it's just an idea, conceptually, to the characters. It's not a place any of them, apart from Eric, have ever been to. Oh, sorry, Leif Erikson, sorry, I mean to say. I'm getting his name mixed up. God, I'm doing it again. So, yeah, just something to bear in mind when you look at these kinds of works. Like, just try and interrogate the work for why it's including certain elements that were historically accurate or authentic. Like, is it to serve the story's purpose, or is it just because that was the thing? Or it could even be because it's been there because, well, it appeals to certain audiences, unfortunately. You know...
How do you spell... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go on.
No. It's totally unrelated. You please continue.
Okay. But I mean, like, that's like when you've seen, like, a lot of Isekai, for example, that's set in, like, alternate retellings of history, like, they start including slavery and stuff like that, because it acts more as an excuse. Like, oh, this was a thing that happened at the time. And, like, I don't give a shit.
Right.
I don't give two flying fucks if that's what actually happened back then. I want you to justify its existence for your story, first and foremost. Annoyingly, I can't actually go into detail on why this is relevant to Fors just yet, because it comes more pronounced in episode 2 when we learn more of his history. But
this is a teaser.
Yeah.
We call it a teaser in the radio business.
But... there is certainly, you know, certainly something to keep in mind. Anyway, you were saying about spelling.
No, I was just wondering how to spell Leif Erikson's last name. Because I'm doing a poll.
Oh, man.
I'm just going to go with whatever is intuitive to me and people will understand what I mean. Yeah, I'm doing a poll on Leif Erikson's drug habit.
1 second. What was that, sorry?
Let me just tell you, Leif Erikson,
cool.
Like, and I support this, I do support it, but boy, he was self-medicating a lot. He was on the pipe throughout the episode.
Well, when you're dealing with kids, is that any surprise?
I mean, I can say as a dad, it's not a surprise at all that you would turn...
Oh, man. I can't wait to see Doc...
Substances?
I can't wait to see Doc's Game Attack, you know, 420 Blaze It.
God, no. No,
420 Raise It, the smoking parent.
There you go. Yes, 420 Raise It. Well, I get... So, thank you for the... Like, I think that was all really good... Whoops, I knocked my microphone. Really good analysis and super relevant to why, like... Like, if anybody is mystified by why, you know, people are annoyed by, you know, certain things in one show versus another, you know, if you're not kind of thinking about things this way and you're just, you see slavery in one show and slavery in another, and you're like, why aren't people consistently mad?
Oh, don't get me started.
Both, you know what I mean? So it's like, these are the things that you need to think about.
Well, this is it. Because,
Shadon summed it up really nicely.
Well, funnily enough, like, that's something I'll be covering in the Shield Hero episode, because I have had people, or rather, I have seen people complain, oh, people don't like it here, but it's in other shows they like Asian Majors Brian. I'm like, Congratulations, you passed basic literary criticism. Like, you literally wrote the first paragraph of your analysis of it. Congratulations, you got anything more? What? No, nothing more? No? Oh. Well, I'm sorry, F minus, see me after class. Anyway, that's a discussion for a different time.
The same element in two different contexts, treated differently. Who'd have thunk? But, okay, so I guess my first talking point, we'll talk about what Emily Gogo Atomic Robot has brought up in a minute. I certainly have this down as a thing worth talking about. I really appreciate about the show, especially on rewatch, like the real sense of place that it fosters in you. It's such a well-realized world. I mean, everything from the fact that at the end of the episode she's crying under the Aurora Borealis to, like, the shoveling the snow off the roof, to, like, the cold, you know, blizzardy nights. And, well, I wanted to be in that room where Leif is telling the story to all the young Viking children, because, like, you see the snow outside, it's horrible, it's coming down, but inside, just the way that they depicted everything, the colors, the sound design, you could just feel the warmth. That house is a place you wanted to be. You wanted to be smelling the smoke from his pipe and sitting by the fire and, you know, seeing his shadow bounce around as he tells, like, this fantastical story. Mm-hmm. And, man, all these little things that the show does, like the milking the cows, you know, it just really, like, grounds the story in a way that I really can get into.
Yeah.
And it makes me... It makes me buy into the story, makes me buy into the characters and invest in it. I can't say enough about the way the show fosters a real sense of place.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And the thing is, environment is key to this story as well. I, again, am really coming up against the walls of what I can talk about here without diving into episode 2 and getting into more detail, because it ties into Thor's history and his decision-making for why he came to live in this village after the battle that we saw him in earlier. But I must stress, just keep it in your mind, because obviously we've got the contrast of Vinland, like a mysterious, you know, even fantastic place that people have never seen before apart from Leif Erikson. And then you've got the reality that they're currently faced with at the moment, which is just constant, you know, struggle and hardship. Environment is key.
Yep. Totally.
I don't really have much else I want to say right now, because again, I'm going to be bouncing up against the walls. So even though I've got, like, once episode 2 hits, damn it. such a problem this. But
yeah. Well, I have more.
Go.
That we can talk
go.
About.
Go.
I think the briefest one I have is I just want to shout out Helga, because she's great. I feel like it's easy to leave her behind when thinking about what the show's done so far. Mm. And she has a lovely maternal presence, and like if you're not paying attention sometimes, like she's doing things, taking care of people in her family all the time. She can't do a lot because she has a weak constitution. And, you know, early on in the scene, Ilva says, like, let me do this for you, Mom. I don't want you catching cold again. You go to sleep. That's why she's doing a lot of the chores instead of her mom. Her mom spends a lot of time inside. And especially, like, when the slave comes in, they think he's dead. And Ilva, like, immediately, like, with no prompting, starts taking care of him, starts like cleaning his feet. Like,
it's very
that's a job no one wants, clean a dead man's feet.
It's very telling that she said that, given that she had previously said so casually, oh, why don't we get one? Why don't we get a slave? Like, you know, you go buy a dog from the store, or, you know, why don't I get a new air conditioning unit? That's the manner in which it was said, but immediately on a dime, and that's not an inconsistent thing, by the way. We are only one episode in, so this is perfect time to establish that characters have shades of dimensions to them. That's good writing, mm-hmm. as it turns out. You know,
yes.
She would be willing to do that.
So there was this incredible juxtaposition. I don't want to call it the montage because I feel like you need more things to cut between to officially call something a montage. But during the middle of the episode, there was a juxtaposition between what they were doing with the slave in Thor's Ziz. How do you do the possessive of Thor's? Is it just Thor's or Thor's's? The Thor's's. The Thor residence. The Thor's residence. They were in the Thor. So the slave and the Thor's residence. Right?
I just say they're the same. Thor's and Thor's.
Thor's on the floors. Thor's residence. The slave on the one hand. And then, as you said, Leif having a talk with Thorfinn. And they cut back and forth between them. You know, what you have Leif telling Thorfinn, the way we got here is by running away. That was how we established our way of life. Cutting back to the slave who is running away from Halfdan. He has nowhere else to go, but he feels like he has
there's
to
your,
run.
There's your parallel. That's something that is established in this episode. And again, I would love to talk more about this, but I have to keep my mouth shut until we do episode 2. God damn it. I'm blaming Amazon for this again.
This is the way that I think that they ran it in Japan too, if I'm not mistaken. They just
I know what I said. I know what I said. Damn you! It's Amazon's fault.
Yep. Okay. I'm gonna go with that story. Let's. Yep. I'm perfectly willing to do this. And okay. More. So during that exchange with Leif and Thorfinn, the first time I watched it. Like, I was bowled over at one point when Thorfinn asks, like, if it's so like, I'm going to paraphrase because I think he talks about the cold, but basically he's saying, if life is so terrible here, why are we born here? Why do we live here? And I feel like this could be. Like, obviously, he's just talking about Iceland and the Icelandic environment. But you could really blow this out in a way to, like, a full-blown existential question. If you kind of see, depending on how you see kind of the human condition, do you see it as this, like, harsh state equivalent to an Icelandic winter that we're slogging through? You know, if it's so fucking hard... Why are we born in this way in the first place?
Oh, man. Again, I this ties into what I want to talk about, but I can't do it. Oh, you know what? Shall we just at least talk about why Thor did it? And then I can talk more about this rather than hold off on it.
Yes, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, let's not cock tease on this one. Let's actually go all in on it.
Okay. So, we can just revisit it next week too.
Yeah, we can. And there'll be stuff I probably missed out. I've not rewatched episode 2, but basically, massive, huge spoilers for something that technically is already out, so I suppose it doesn't really count, whatever. Basically, Thor's had a change of heart mid battle at the point where he drops his sword, which was, you know, not him literally dropping it because he, you know, fumbled it, but like because he was done. He's done fighting. He chose, you know, to not do it anymore, to live a different life.
Yep.
So, him coming to to Iceland is him leaving that life behind. Here's the problem, though. First off, again, without going into specifics, as parallel to the slave, like, the slave did the same thing. He wanted to leave his life behind and find somewhere better. Or rather, to, like, even if it's not as question of, you know, environment being better, but at least the actual things he was doing would be better. Like, sure, he's in a hellish frozen wasteland, but he's free. and the same applies to fours. But, first off, history has a way of finding you, and in some way I think fours even recognises that, as evidenced at the end of episode 1 with the chest being there. After all, why have all those arms and armour if he didn't ever suspect he might need to use them? They're living in a remote village in the middle of nowhere. What are the odds of anything bad happening? And as it turns out, Fawz, of course, talks his way through it, even, you know, willing to pay as much as necessary to preserve the peace rather than, you know, slaughtering them all as he did previously, which he could have done. He very easily could have probably mowed all of Halfdan's men down himself with bare hands. But anyway, but I think what the anime is showing here through this is that slavery is not just simply, you know, the act of owning someone else, but I think it's also what we impose on ourselves as well. Like, it's a question of you know, we choose to break free of our context in terms of what life we live, but then we can end up shackling ourselves to an environment that also, you know, has its own pains that we are ultimately, you know, locked into. I mean, I would argue that Fawz, in breaking free of living that life of war, has only substituted one form of bondage for another, which is to live in this kind of exile in this wasteland.
I guess, like, you could, he might say, I guess it depends on, like, how he joined the army, right? Like, if he was conscripted and the choice was made for him versus choosing to live in this sort of, like, peaceful village, you could say the difference between the two choices is I chose one and the other was forced upon me. And so you could call them both a kind of bondage, but one is better because it's what I chose to bind myself to, as opposed to having it forced on me. But we don't know at this point. I mean, he could have chosen to be part of the army as well. He could have just loved fighting. And then one day, after such a long build-up of it, he didn't love it anymore and wanted to get out.
Well, this is why I said before that it was noteworthy that Fawz just kind of works his way through the battle with such disinterest. It was already leading up to that point where he was dead inside dealing with this. I mean, we will see plenty of other, indeed we'll see this in future episodes, characters react to war and the prospect of it with great joy. Like, they think it's incredible. They've got this all like, I'm going to go to war, it's going to be cool, I'm going to plunder it, I'm going to pillage it, I'm going to kill me some people, it's going to be great. Whereas the reality, of course, of war, as we all know, is that it's awful and terrible. But yeah, I think that it's a question of, you know, for Thorfinn, like, for him, he's got the opposite problem now, where he feels he can't, you know, his bondage is his land that he lives in, rather than what he's doing with his life. And I think that maybe the long-term goal of Vinland Saga as a story will be, or rather his objective will be, can he be free from both? Can he be free from the legacies of his father, perhaps, and, you know, of war and all that? And can he be free from this miserable place that he's stuck in now?
Right. Is there...
Because it's an idealized thing. It's an idealized thing he's being told by Leif Erikson. It's a paradise thing, I'd argue. I mean...
the Great Valley.
I mean, wasn't that the whole reason, after all, that the colonial America was established in the first place, to escape?
From
perceived bonds and, you know, to truly live a free
taxes.
Life.
Taxes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, is there a thing called freedom in this world? Yeah, might be a thing that the show wants to interrogate.
Yeah, I mean, the slave gentleman, for example, he had barely been escaped for a day and he was already found by Halfdan. Like, the past has an unfortunate way of catching up to you. And then that's the question, you know, can we escape the past of the things we've done? But now I really am going up against the grain of talking about episode 2 and beyond that, so I'm going to keep shtuck. But yeah, I think that maybe that's what it's trying to interrogate, the idea, you know, that we can be locked not only into bondage of responsibility and our actions and our past, but just where we live as well. Like, it's a hardship living there. And I don't doubt for a second, I mean, Fawz himself was dreaming of Vinland at the very start of the episode, so that suggests to me at some level that he would, if all possible, rather be there than wherever he is right now. Indeed, he tells it to the slave, but, you know, tells him the story of Vinland as a comforting thing, knowing that he is going to die. It's the send-off that he needs. Yep. So he clearly sees value in it, even if he himself has never seen it firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess a related point to the sort of, you know, does freedom really exist? I guess taking a step even further back in terms of human problems, returning to the whole notion of why were we born in the first place if life is so hard, which, again, you could construe Thorfinn is asking Leif, and like how do we get away from how do we escape whatever the situation is that we find ourselves existing in? And
booze,
you know. Well, yep, that's yep. There's distraction is definitely good. Yep.
No booze for me today, by the way, folks. I'm still jabbering nonsense, but I can assure you, I am sober.
But we the mead is coming though. You're gonna do a Vinland cast.
Oh yes.
Taking some swills, I predict. But so like Leif has a particular answer to the question, right? Is like that circumstances like that it's our this is so shitty for us. And again, he's talking in particular, but I'm going to make it more general and existential because that's what I enjoy doing. It's so shitty, our circumstances and our existence, because they were forced on us by an external force. It's Harald's fault, right? And all we need to do, what we did do, is run away. And we just need to keep running to get to, like, some kind of idyllic place where we can alleviate or completely relieve ourselves of whatever our hardships and pains and struggles are. We have the power to do that. Just like whatever external agent had the power to enforce our shitty circumstances. Now we have the power to and control to change them and leave and go to like somewhere beyond our original sort of state. And this is an answer. And boy, I am very curious to see if there are other answers, right? And how to alleviate the human condition. Yeah, how to cope, how to, you know, with existence, pain, struggle, or whatever. Is that the only? Surely there will be other answers the show offers besides like just run. And yeah, I'm super, super curious about that. And I loved that that came out of this juxtaposition and the parallels that you talked about. So I talked about, let's see, the sense of place, warmth, safety. Okay. Thor's, before we do the slavery thing, I want to talk about that last.
Oh God. That's something Mon says casually. Before we do the slavery thing, let's talk about the last.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So Halfdan. let's talk about.
Can't take that name serious.
Halfdan. Let's talk about Mr. Halfdan.
Do you reckon he's like Napoleon in that he, you know, always felt very embarrassed about how short he was? Although apparently Napoleon was not actually short; he was like 5'8" or something. So it's just a historical myth. But yeah, I didn't know. Although, like I say, with Halfdan, I just genuinely cannot imagine him being anything other than 5'2". And
he must be.
I want to imagine like it's like one of those Zucker Brothers airplane skits where it turns out like you've got like Halfdan and Thor's like head to head, like level, but then you pan out and he's just stood on a box.
Yeah.
I can't take him seriously.
I love that scene where he stands up, Thor's as in like towers over him.
Mm-hmm.
As not only a greater in physical stature, but moral stature, I would argue.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Saying, in that scene. But Halfdan, so, yeah, like, You described him as lawful evil.
Oh, yes.
Which is an interesting characterization. I would agree. Like, as presented, as instantiated in the character of Halfdan, whatever sort of his beliefs are, the way he deploys them is brutal and evil and awful. I am curious about what you think about his idea that... Okay, so are you familiar with Thomas Hobbes and the Leviathan?
I've heard of it, but that's the extent of it.
Okay, well, this is gonna like be very. I'm trying to give like the most basic breakdown of this book, which is not fun to read, but I have read the whole thing. It's like a kind of a foundational like political text if you're studying political philosophy. And like history of the early modern kinds of it, but basically Hobbes is like sort of nature is shitty and awful. Like this is before Darwin, right? But and survival of the fittest. But you know, Hobbes was like outside of civilization. If there was no such thing as civilization, human beings would be awful to each other. Like we'd just be killing each other over.
I think Hobbes might never have understood what civilization actually is anyway, because I can think of plenty of civilizations over the centuries that have done all of those things, like they're filling in a bingo card. Woohoo! Yeah. I got genocide! Full house!
Well, those are one civilization doing it to another, like one gang versus another gang. If there's no association, right, no civilizing, no kind of ring around or national boundary or some kind of arbitrary line of heritage that you can draw around a group of people, they'll just do it to each other. But if you can form a society, if you're like a part of it, then you'll be bound to not do that. Like there'll be some kind of, you know, Hobbes talks about a sovereign and like a ruler, and there will be laws, rules, things that bind people, and that way everyone can get along. This is like early social contract theory, okay. Right? Like the whole reason we all don't kill each other is because we're all deathly afraid of dying brutally, and so we all make an agreement to live together. And so it seems like Halfdan is kind of there. You know how he says the only thing that makes he used the word heathen, but I think you could use like the word beast also. The only thing that makes a human being out of these beasts that we are is a law, and it's absolute and it binds everybody, and everyone has to fucking follow the rules, mm-hmm. or there will be chaos. And you could see how on the fucking fringe of, you know, Greenland. The very harsh environment, you might think, okay, everybody needs to be in line 100% because whatever we have established here is fragile. It could easily crumble if people are going in different directions or doing whatever they want. So I guess, like, yeah, where do you stand on, like, aside from the brutality, like, this is a very brutal kind of enforcement. Although Hobbes would be okay with brutal enforcement. What's your take on kind of his idea of law, society, all that stuff?
Well, I think for him, like, it's a case of legitimacy trumps all else. Like, the fact that it is legal and prescribed and rule, you know, has set rules and, you know, ways of enacting things means it's okay. That's the thing that trumps that. It goes above morality and ethics for him. Like, that's why it's okay to own slaves. As long as, you know, there are rules, like, you know, the chains, you know, the fact that he belongs to me and therefore I want him back. I think that's, like, Halfdan's, like, main measure. Like I said, lawfully before, and I think the lawful element is probably the strongest part of his character. Not to say that say that he isn't evil, of course, in that sense. Or rather that he isn't, you know, incredibly twisted or just doesn't, like, you know, I mean, he does rip that guy's face off with the chains. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
There's hair in
there. They blurred it out for a reason.
There's hair.
I know. That looked awful.
There was hair
awful.
In that. It was grim.
God.
But, like, for him, the law...
You reminded me of Castlevania.
Oof. God, you're right. Whoops, I meant to hit your finger. But anyway.
Oh, right. That scene was so brutal.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
Anyway, so yeah, for him, law is everything. It doesn't matter what moral side it falls on, as long as it is prescribed in law and it is followed and there are rules. Like, if you're doing some heinous shit to someone, as long as it's justified by the rules that have been set out and agreed on by the public in common law, go nuts. Why not? And that even then just goes from beyond simple law to social, like, contracts between, or, like, social understanding between him and his fellows. Like, oh, he's got that underling who starts mouthing off, and he's like, no. I'm talking here. Shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when the guy starts giving Thor's crap in his house, says, no, I'm doing the talking here. Leave it with me. And it's not him, and I should stress, it's not him doing that to, like, you know, be chest puffy, like, I am in charge here. It's just to him a very clear pecking order. You know, he's the one in charge. He doesn't need anyone to speak for him. But not because he's trying to prove himself as the big bad, but because that's the rule of law to him. That's the way things should be. But that's the thing, you know. Thor's, like, on the other hand, like, the law, like, he'll operate within that to try and get things done in order to, you know, save the slave's life. He won't just kill Halfdan there and then. But for him, clearly he places morality on a higher level than law, because otherwise he would just simply give him back.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, like, Halfdan, I feel like, you know, whatever the rule set or law set or contract is, like, that is ethics. Like, there's no, like, that is the line. There is no line that but that which the law that we agree to can come closer to or be farther away than. It's entirely subjective. Whatever we agree to is the good or the bad.
Yeah.
Versus, like you said, Thor's, and I happen to be more sympathetic to Thor's here, seems to hold that, like, no... There are actually, like, just because you came up with these laws doesn't mean that they're good. There's some sort of other canon or metric or measure by which we can decide whether or not these laws are good or bad, and the methods by which you enforce them are in fact bad.
Yeah.
So there's, like, goodness and badness over and above these laws. So, like, this is, like, a thing that I think is interesting, those two ideologies.
Yeah. Well, this will be relevant, I suspect, later again. It's a wild, random speculation here, but part of the idea of settling or going to a frontier that you've never been to before is that you obviously have to establish a law fixed from the ground up, including the laws of the land. This, after all, did happen with America eventually when it, you know, was formed and then eventually became independent. You know, they had their own laws, same with a lot of other countries. So, I wonder if Halfdan will make a return later in Vinland itself when we eventually get there, and if he, in turn, will, you know, be a bit flustered by the fact that, you know, there is no rule of law necessarily properly established yet, things are happening on a moment-by-moment basis. For someone like him, who is very controlling in that way, that's probably anathema to him. I will say, just to bring things down to a bit of a simpler critique here, one of the things I really appreciate about Halfdan as a character is that he does not come in and do the immensely cliché thing of burn the fucking village down on the first night. He comes and goes,
right.
And there's no sudden betrayal, there's no sudden turnaround, like, you know, okay, I've got the sheep, kill them all. Like, he doesn't...
Thank God, he's like, consistent.
Yeah, he doesn't even openly threaten violence, really.
No.
It's more of an understanding that Force has with Eric. When they're discussing, you know, it's not Eric, sorry, with Ilva.
Leaf.
Yeah, with Ilva.
Oh, like, no, sorry.
With Ilva, like, it's more of an understanding they have that it can come to that in the theory if he doesn't provide him what he wants. So I really again appreciate that. He's certainly far more interesting than your typical opening antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to seeing more of him later.
I wonder if he will come back. That'll be interesting to see.
One thing I should stress, by the way, though, that I do find funny is this relates back to something I was thinking about Shield Hero, in that, you know, if you want to make the justification that because the law says it's good to do, the problem is that law, like the law of the land, is always mutable. It's always decided by people. It's not a divine edict. It doesn't come down from the heavens, despite what the Bible may tell you. And even then, often a lot of laws these days go against what, like, holy text might say. Like, so we decide, you know, what our laws are, and they do change over time. There's no, like, you know, absolute law, like, of what's right and wrong. That's something we have to figure out as our morality changes. So, I'm curious, like, if that'll become a part of, like, what happens with Half-Dead later, where someone points out, you're wrong. The rules didn't exist necessarily before you came along, or if they, or whoever came up with them, you know, they weren't there beforehand. Who's to say they'll be there when you're gone? Like, you know, you can't constantly think of things like, you know, as being, you know, set in stone. And also, just as another point, again, just as it's the law, doesn't make it morally right. Like, hey, it might be legal for Half-Dan to own slaves. Does that make it fine? Nope.
Yeah.
Not at all.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah, this is the conflict.
I mean, in modern day, for example, if you think this is an old hat thing, in Brunei, I believe it's called, it was recently legalized for gay men to be stoned to death. That's legal. Like, you could...
Really?
Yes, I believe so. I could be misquoting that.
Oh my god.
But that's the thing. It's in... The law says that that can be done. I think there's been some revisions to it since then, but that was the original, like, draft of the script. So as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, legality doesn't trump that. You know, doesn't trump just actually genuinely giving a shit about people. So he is still very much the villain here, even though he seems very reasonable of how he's coming about. But if anything, I think he serves also more as foreshadowing, because obviously we're paralleling the slave to Fawz here. So what then might happen to Fawz next time if the slave has just had a pursuit made of him across, you know, the ocean and whatnot? Things aren't going to end well. I mean, obviously, you know, poor Thorfinn, you know, his uncle Owen and his aunt Brewer are going to be murdered by stormtroopers, and he's going to get taken away by some strange old coot in the desert, and he's going to learn the ways of the Force. It's all going to be very terrible and tragic.
Sorry. We got another reference in.
Had to be
done. Oh, so happy. So, I think we have, like, kind of talked a bit about what we think about what Thor's, you know, when he bartered for the life of the slave, like, what was going on there. Emily in chat, GoGo Atomic Robot, made the point that, you know, she felt like you could infer from Thor's actions that he was conscripted into the army or do you call the Navy?
I would call the Navy.
When it's Vikings. Because, I mean, they're like, yeah.
Well, naval soldiers still can fight on land, but the difference between the Navy and, say, the Army and the Air Force is their mode of their primary mode of transport, their theater of operations.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Vikings, it was the, you know, the Navy.
Yeah,
so Navy. So, yeah, I say the Navy.
So she thought it was reasonable to infer that he was conscripted into the Navy because of how highly he values freedom. And, you know, as you said, he traded eight sheep for a life of a person who he didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
For the freedom of a person he didn't know, who was at death's door and died shortly thereafter.
Whoops.
God,
I hope Thor's never gets into Gatcha.
That's so wrong. But I feel like this is a good... I've brought this up before, but this is like a good illustration of why he's going to come into conflict with people like Halfdan and people like Floki later.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he is obviously a deontologist when it comes to ethics and not a utilitarian. you know, clearly the needs of his family are more numerous. He could make more people happy and do good for more people by simply giving the man back to Halfdan. And because his family will get to keep the sheep, mm-hmm. Halfdan will get to have his own way, and like he'll be made happy by the example he can show to the people.
And
slave will suffer.
Well,
the slave will suffer deeply, but like
I wouldn't even say
again,
would,
the utilitarian.
Because if you consider how events played out, do you really think that
he might die on the way back?
Oh, he would have. I feel 99% certain that have happened. So as it turns out, had he given him back, it wouldn't really have mattered anyway. Although, I'll tell you why he didn't give him back as well, because bear in mind him leaving off of that thing about Vinland, you know, telling him about where they are, or you know, giving the fake idea that they're in Vinland, which is, you know, this promised land. But here's the mm-hmm. thing, right? That's him seeing, you know, knowing he's going to die and seeing him off. If Halfdan then came in and then took him, then that would be ruined.
Right. It would. That is true, but I feel like even setting that aside as a factor, over and above that, I feel like rather than kind of be a utilitarian and like a happiness calculator, he's willing to do something that he feels like he's morally bound to do. He feels duty bound to protect this person's freedom, obligated. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that it is going to make more people suffer than it does good. That doesn't matter. That kind of calculus does not come
and
into play.
Bear in mind, his daughter was asking before to buy it, where he said that's not what we do, but then he chooses to do so this
exactly.
time. But not because he wants it for the utility that one would provide, but rather because it's mm-hmm. the morally right thing to do to spare this man even just his last few hours, you know, living that fantasy of, you know, going off into the sunset, rather than, you know, having Halfdan probably beating him to death on the way back, as it would turn out.
Yep. Yeah. And that's a really cool thing about Thor's, and I wonder if it will be part of how he meets his end, and I wonder if then, like, Thorfinn will have to respond to it in some way. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of maybe rebel against it and then kind of come over to it and see the beauty of living by those kind of moral principles and absolute duties, or whether he'll reject it and kind of find a different way. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, that's it. Like, will Thorfinn escape his own past, like, eventually when this all goes down? I mean, the OP makes it clear mm-hmm. he's got a lot of growing up to do before he starts pretending he's a Dungeons & Dragons rogue with, you know, those two daggers.
The rogue, right?
That's what he is.
Yes.
But he's got mm-hmm. a lot of growing up to do before he gets to that point, and the spectre of his father is going to hang over him in a lot of ways. Like, you know, here's who he was as a warrior, but here's who he tried to be as a father with the guiding principles he tried to give him, which are clearly very different things. After all, Thor's doesn't actually fight or kill anyone in the episode, apart from in that flashback to the battle. So, hey.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true. Okay. I think I have exhausted my
I'm good.
Talking points.
I'm said everything I need to.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about Jormungand. We talked about... there was a thing... like the first time I watched it, I was a little... weirded out, I guess, or unconvinced by... because I wasn't absorbing everything properly. Thor's desertion. Like, the first time I watched it, I just sort of felt like, oh! Like, that one guy was like, Maria! And then collapsed. And then he was like, well, I'm out. We're actually killing people. I'm not about this life. See you later. But, like, you know, on reflection, kind of recontextualizing that opening scene... and also knowing what I knew after watching the other episodes, it's like, no, as you said, Shadon, there's a sense of him growing disillusioned with that life mm-hmm. over time, and this is just the breaking point. So, yeah, no, I'm ready to rate the episode now.
All right, I'll go first, actually, Doc. But yeah, like, we have a very, very strong start to this this show here. It's clearly got a lot of ideas being set up. We've got a lot of nice, you know, character build up here for Fawz and for Thorfinn. And I think that it actually plays the eye. I mean, you could argue, you know, you've seen this set up a thousand times before. I made the Star Wars joke. And like a lot of the times when I make jokes referencing that property or others on here, I do it for humor, but I do it because there's a grain of truth in the comparison. I mean, it's not reasonable for the savvy viewer to think to themselves, Fawz and probably his daughter, Ylva and Helga, they're all going to die. Thorfinn's going to end up, you know, going his own way. You could predict that's going to happen in some respects. But I think the script actually plays that to its own strengths. It takes that otherwise, you know, predictable element of it and turns it into a good thing. Especially what happens with Halfdan, surveying a lot of expectation there. So, all told, this has been a very, very solid start. The animation is perfectly fine. It looks a good-looking show. The character stuff is strong. And I am very eager to see where it goes from here. Put me down for more Vinland Saga. So, all told, I'm going to go with 4 out of 5, you know, smoke weed every day Vinland pipes.
Okay, that was good. I appreciate that. I think it was super strong. I appreciate the sense of place that the show established. The milieu and the
milieu.
The world.
Oh my! We really are getting the boast today, aren't we?
The mise en scène. I could smell the sea air and the cold.
I mean, we said we were going to gain a Patreon going, but did we tell you we were sponsored by Merriam-Webster?
That's right. Thank you, Merriam, in particular. Webster, you can go fuck. Because it used to be, do you remember when it was just Webster? Was it just Webster's Dictionary? And then it became Merriam-Webster? I feel like that was a thing.
Not a clue. Not a clue.
Okay. Check on that. Check on that, listeners/viewers. And how about Roger? Can we bring out Roger? Just be like, Roger, come on. Did you ever have a Roger's thesaurus?
No.
Or did you just say Roget?
No, it was just... Roger. Bear in mind, I'm from the UK, so it was basically Collins all the way. Collins English Dictionary, bitches.
Oh, okay. Cool. That's an interesting tidbit to know. Well, where was I? Yes, Vinland Saga, the world, the milieu. It was great.
Do you whisper that into your wife's ear? Milieu?
What?
Do you whisper that into your wife's ear? Milieu?
I do. It's a milieu. Milieu.
Pohon, pohon. It's a fucking fragrance. All right, no, rate the damn episode already before I go off on one.
So like I like there, you know, you brought up Leiji Matsumoto character. There's a thing that reminded me thematically of Matsumoto, like there's a certain, and of course it's played out differently in Matsumoto's work because it's, you know, space fantasy, but there's a certain sort of brutality to the world. But there's also a strong moral undercurrent. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Vinland Saga really does have a very strong moral point of view. And it's got the attention to historical detail. There's going to be a lot of fun stuff to look up. I like all the art design. I'm not as keen on the color palette. But, I mean, what are you going to do? This is not, you know, fantasy Tokyo via Ikuhara. You know, this is what it is, and it looks a little bit like Attack on Titan-ish, but again, that is, like, true to the world.
They did all right with Thorfinn's dream, though, giving it the suitable childlike qualities it needs to, particularly with the way...
yeah, there was some color.
With it displayed, with how it displayed Jormungandr. So that was there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that too,
I mean,
yeah.
On another note, can I just say how refreshing it is to have an anime that comes right out of the gate by saying, slavery bad? That feels like some fucking innovative shit.
You wouldn't think that would be a difficult bar to clear. But
no,
2019.
The lowest of bars, truly. I'll get a stamp for that or something, so I can put it on there. Like, slavery bad as per this show. Again, fucking really, do we have to have this conversation, folks? Just saying.
I know. I'm gonna give this episode. It was definitely an appetizing first plate. Also put me down for more. Great introduction. I'm going to give it 4.25 Northern Lights out of 5.
Good shout. Right, so that concludes our look at episode 1 somewhere out here. So that is probably how you're all feeling now about our podcast. Like, I'm done now. We've had 2 hours. I keep tying it back all the time. Yeah. I'm just too good at this. But anyway, thank you all again, everyone, for joining us today on Vinland Saga. I really appreciate all coming along and having us. Enjoying us having a good old banter about this particular show. I'm really looking forward to covering more of it. Do, as always...
Sophie! Don't hurt my heart, Sophie. God, you're so right. I'm sorry, Shadon.
Sophie's so great, sorry. Though. Like, every time, just caught every, me off every guard. Time I hear someone say that something isn't political, I think it just basically says to me, I don't like to think. Thinking's hard. I don't like to think. Thinking's hard. Yeah, I did repeat that twice deliberately. God. Don't put everything's political. Deal with it. Anyway. But yeah, thank you everyone for joining us. Do feel free to like and subscribe on whatever form you may be listening to. If you're on SoundCloud, drop us a like there. If you're on iTunes, please leave us a rating and a quick review. It will help our discoverability. If you're on YouTube and you're listening to this and you're not already subscribed to us, please feel free to drop us a subscribe on there. We'd really appreciate it. We do, of course, have our Patreon now, so do check that out. That'd be patreon.com. I think it's / Warrior-Desho. Is it that?
That is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We will have more content coming soon. I'm actually looking to get the Shield Hero stuff done within the next 2 weeks. So get on board for that soon, because boy howdy do I have a lot to say about that. Doc's already read some of the scripts. I'm not even probably halfway done with it necessarily yet.
Oh my god! Okay. It was already getting long, but that's great.
There's a lot to unpack in that giant whale turd that is that show. Believe me.
Fair enough.
Believe me. But yeah, we'll be having more content coming out on the Patreon side of things soon. We will be back next week to cover episode 2, and then episode 3 the following week after that, and then at that point we'll let the show play out. As always, though, thank you very much, everyone, for joining us this evening. I have been Shaden. That has been some Burke who joins me on the podcast area again, who I've never met before in my life. No, of course, it's Dark. I hope you all have a fantastic evening. And as always, everyone, brace your breath till the ends of the universe. Good night.
Good night, everybody.